Welcome back. Michael Warren Thomas here. It's the Grapevine at SaverLife.com, and lots of things happening in the wine world, but also the world of beer. And a few weeks ago, the Democrat and Chronicle had an article about custom brew crafters, CB Craft Brewers, and Honeyway Falls. Will Cleveland wrote about the fact that it had closed a little while ago, about a year ago, I guess, and it's remained vacant. So this is a big facility. The property are hoping that a brewery will come in, and you should read Will Cleveland's article. It's a 10,000 square foot building, which is not brand new, but it was built 12 years ago, somewhere in that range. So it's a pretty recent building. And I didn't realize until reading the article that it's a 300-acre property. So this is in Honeyway Falls. It is just south of the village. It's right almost across the street from Honeyway Falls Distillery. And Josh Landscape is also across the street. So it's, you know, not in downtown with, so to speak, Honeyway Falls down village. It's with 300 acres, it's right on the edge, which gives you lots of room to expand the brewery, to you could put in a festival site. There's all sorts of things you could do with 300 acres. So a very, very large property. And they've had some breweries look at it. It has the equipment there. There's a 10-barrel brewing system. It says the article, Cleveland, multiple 60-barrel fermenters and a mountain of kegs. So custom brew crafters was a big part of the growth of breweries in our area, partly because a lot of the current brewers worked there at one point or another. I think Dave Schlosser, who worked at Rohrbach's and now owns Naked Dove, worked there, I think, when Custom Brew Crafters first opened. Maybe he was their first brewer. And both Custom Brew Crafters and Rohrbach's were really instrumental in training this next generation of brewers now that have grown Manoah County's breweries from four when Custom Brew Crafters opened, and according to Will Cleveland, at least 25 brewers in Manoah County right now. So it's changed a lot. He also mentions that Three Heads Brewing really was launched by Custom Brew Crafters. That's where they had the beer made until they opened their own facility, big one, on University. Atlantic. Three Heads is right across from Glen Edith and Nosh and a couple other places off Atlantic. So a key part of the brewing history of Rochester, which goes back a long ways, but the more recent history, they played a key role at Custom Brew Crafters. So again, they're looking for someone to come in and buy it, to lease it, to buy to, you know, lease to own it or whatever. I guess they're pretty flexible. But again, you can read more about it and see some photos at democratandchronicle.com. Look up CB Craft Brewers, and Will Cleveland will come up. And again, some breweries have looked at it. I don't, you know, probably a lot of breweries don't need a place that big. Perhaps, you know, we're in the middle of a pandemic, tougher time to get financing, just hard to predict what's going to happen in the next year. And so, you know, they may be sitting on this for a year. Also, who knows, maybe an outside brewer, like Other Half Brewing, that moved into the brewery at 5 and 20 and 64 in Bloomfield. Maybe someone like that will come into our area. It's, you know, we've become a hot area for brewing. Their arrival kind of signal of that, but lots of things happening in the brewing industry here in our area. And I don't know, with 300 acres, you could grow your own hops. You can grow a lot of hops on 300 acres, I would guess. So, again, Honeyway Falls, great little community, and really pretty easy to get to, not far from Mendon Ponds, and it feels like a natural place for a brewery. So, again, the equipment is there, which, you know, probably ups the price, but it's, I guess maybe the problem is that, partly, that, you know, someone who wants to launch a brewery doesn't want all that equipment right away and all that overhead, and someone who already has a brewery, you know, maybe they don't want that type of equipment that's at CB, or they already have enough that they would bring with them. But I think, you know, at some point, I would bet in the next year or so, once the pandemic is over and we have a vaccine that works, that this property will be a brewery once again. I just brought some more grape juice out of the freezer. I do this during the hot days of summer. And this is juice that I froze last fall. Some of it's actually from a year before. Keep a bunch of different varieties in the freezers. I have some Catawba, some Sauval, some Riesling. One thing, we're only about a month away from the harvest beginning for 2020, believe it or not. They won't be harvesting Riesling and Chardonnay in late August, but they will start harvesting probably Aurora. That's often one of the first grapes to be harvested, and usually end of August, and it's August 2nd, so hard to believe that we're that close to harvest beginning. The Rieslings, Chardonnays, Cabernets, Limburgers, etc., Cabernet Franc, they won't be harvested more like until October, sometimes into November, but probably in the October range. So those are, Aurora is just the first, and then things slowly ramp up from there, and I have later September, October, they're really the key harvest months. So that means the wineries right now are bottling, trying to free up tank space. They've been out looking at the vineyards, trying to estimate harvest quantities, how much juice they'll have, which tanks they'll use, and all of these considerations in anticipation of harvest. So if you want grape juice to freeze like I do, you got to buy it in the fall when Randall Standish and Fulkerson are pressing juice. And again, they don't really open until mid-September when there are more varieties available for pressing. But then I go and get half-gallon jugs and freeze them. Take a glass off the top so there's room for expansion of the juice. Nothing, really not much that's worse than having a red grape juice overflow in your freezer. It's sticky, it's colorful, and it's a massive mess. So you take a glass off the top and then put it in the freezer. So I'll probably defrost the Riesling next. Now that's expensive grape juice. You're probably not going to be drinking a lot of Riesling as grape juice, because any of the vinifera grapes are relatively expensive, generally three or four times the price of the hybrid grapes, at least when I buy them as juice. So Sauval, for example, might be $6 a gallon, and the Riesling more like $18 a gallon. Huge difference in price. But I'm only buying a couple half gallons, so it's nice to have some Riesling on hand. And one of the signature non-alcoholic drinks that FLX Table does for guests is a Riesling sparkling water combination. And so they obviously are freezing Riesling juice as well, and then combining it with some sparkling water. And it makes a really refreshing drink, again, non-alcoholic, but something interesting. And, you know, Riesling juice is delicious. It's sweet, obviously. It's not fermented, so it's got all its sugar. But it also has some really, really great flavors. And I generally don't drink those grape juices, you know, at full strength. I dilute them anyway. So whether it's with sparkling water or seltzer or ice, you know, but I usually dilute it, you know, at least a third water, two-thirds juice, just because it's really sweet and kind of intense. So, you know, it's personal taste how much one would want to dilute it, but I dilute it maybe by a third water. And so for the last several months, we've had a lot of hot weather. Every week or two, I defrost another half gallon of juice. And had some Catawba recently, some Rujan, Leon Malo. There are lots of them. And you probably don't recognize the names of many of the French-American hybrids. But they're inexpensive to get as juice. And some of them are made into varietal wines. There just aren't very many of them. Cuca Lake Vineyards, the only place that produces a Leon Malo that I've seen. Heron Hill was one of the only ones that made a Bacco, and I'm not sure they're still making a Bacco Noir. Often these are blended into table wines, red table wines, these French-American hybrids, or used in smaller quantities with vinifera grapes. So again, if you go down and do some tasting as well as purchasing some of the juice, because you can taste each one of these before you buy them at Fulkerson and Randall Standish. Fulkerson on Seneca Lake, Randall Standish on Canandaigua Lake, just north of Naples. Even if you don't recognize the grape, you should taste it. See, and it varies every year. Just like, you know, just like wines, the flavor of what comes in is different based on the how cold it's been, how warm it's been, when it was harvested, a lot of different factors, and the terroir that it's grown on. And I'm not sure how much terroir makes a difference with the juice itself. It's because of the sweetness of it. If I get to both of those places, Fulkerson and Randall Standish, I'll often taste all of them that I can, and then sometimes I like one better than the other. Often they have different varieties, but sometimes they have the same ones, and it's happened a couple times where I decided not to get it at one of those places and tried the same juice at the other and liked it. And ended up getting some. So, again, that season of great pressing and the juice being available, really 2 months away, very first harvest, more like a month away. If you have some favorite wines or foods or news from the world of wine, email me, michael@saverlife.com. This is generally my favorite food weekend of the year, because it's normally Garlic Festival time at Fox Run. They'd be welcoming 10,000 guests this weekend to their Garlic Festival, one of the largest ones in the United States. And, of course, it was canceled many months ago. Also, Herd Orchards was doing their midsummer tastings this first weekend of August. Finger Lakes Culinary Bounty often had their annual harvest dinner the first Monday of August. This was always one of my favorite weekends, and as someone who just enjoys going to these events, I feel sad about it, but especially for the businesses that rely on it for income. And you know, having 10,000 guests come to the Garden Festival, which was a free festival and free parking, but you know, those people purchased wine, purchased food, purchased cheeses and things from the vendors that they had at the Garlic Festival. And places like Herd Orchards, you know, would have 140 people a night for the 2 nights of their midsummer tasting. You know, that's 200 or 300 people that are not purchasing the tasting and usually buying other things. So, part of your way to support them, go out and pick some blueberries at Herd Orchards. They're not open on Sundays right now. They're open Wednesday through Saturday, but you can make an appointment and go out this next week. It's going to be cooler, actually. Wednesday, Thursday look like, 78 degrees and partly sunny. You can't get better weather than that for picking blueberries. The Brighton Farmers Market going on right now till 1. Head over and support our local farmers and various food vendors there. John John's posted some great photos of the baked goods they're bringing and have at the Brighton Farmers Market right now. So, again, 9 to 1, that's the Brighton High School parking lot, and really pretty wide open space. They've set it up well to keep it socially distanced, and you need to wear a mask. You wear a mask. Hopefully more of our leaders will show by example that it is not only a good idea, but a crucial idea if we want to keep businesses reopening. That's right now one of the most important things that we can do for our economy is to keep it reopening. Restaurants are still at 50% in our area. New York City restaurants still cannot serve indoors. They're waiting trying to for the infection. It's going to New York State has kept it low, like 1.1%. And when you look at the rest of the country, that is remarkable, that low. So if we can keep it like that, restaurants will be able to open more. And I think one of the big concerns is people from outside our area coming in with the coronavirus and having that spark our infection rates. So that's, it's tourism season, a lot of people coming from other states, and so we've got to manage this so that we can continue on this trajectory of reopening. But restaurants aren't going to survive at 50%. I've said this a bunch of times. We struggle to survive at 100% capacity, but 50% is merely practice. And probably losing money, partly just to remind people you're still there, and in the hope to 75% capacity soon, and then maybe we can get to 100% capacity, which, as outdoor dining is going to be less of an option, and we really have to back up 100%. And That's not going to be easy to do. One of the restaurants that closed just yesterday, Aunt Rosie's, which was on East Main Street, part of Max Rochester, and Seth Ryder Lindahl, their executive chef, done a phenomenal job there. I'm guessing that the lease was up, and they decided not to renew it and close the restaurant instead. That's truly a guess. I haven't talked to them there, but Aunt Rosie's has closed as of yesterday, and it'll be interesting to see where Seth ends up as chef. I hope he stays in this area. He's a wonderful chef, very nice guy to meet, and I really loved what he did at Aunt Rosie's. Some delicious food. So we'll run into him again at some point in the near future and let you know where he's cooking. That right now restaurants are again just trying to survive. So if you're not comfortable dining indoors, and frankly I'm not really, get takeout. Do the outdoor seating. There are some really good options, some really beautiful outdoor seating. And as I've said before, if you get takeout, get a couple extra entrees to bring to friends or family, or perhaps to put in the freezer so you have some easy meals in the near future. I've done that with a number of restaurants, including Lucano, which my mother has a couple of favorite dishes there. So I'll get, you know, three or four entrees of it, bring it home, and have one that night, and put the rest in the freezer. And it's actually, we're running out. I got to go back and get some more from Lucano. So supporting our restaurants right now is key, and it's partly just psychological, letting them know that you're thinking about them, that you support them, that you want to see them around for the long run. It's really just a season of survival. I saw a note that the French wine industry is turning a bunch of their wine into hand sanitizer, partly because the sales have dropped so much of wine. You know, they're not really shipping much to the United States because restaurants here are not operating anywhere near, you know, even if they're or at least if you counted the cost of the wine being made in France right now, and it's got to be disheartening. That happened here to some degree during the April, May, when we were really crushed in New York State and there wasn't any hand sanitizer. Places like Black Button asked wineries if they had extra wine, and several did. Not our best wines, but wines that more bulk produced and inexpensive. And so they were able to make a lot of hand sanitizer using juice from and wine from Finger Lakes wineries. The advantage to making hand sanitizer when you start with wine is that it's already partly transformed into alcohol. So part of that process is done, and they just have to kind of finish that process. But it gets them partway there rather than starting with sugar water, basically, or fresh pressed grape juice. They already have 10-12% alcohol in those wines. And I think Red Cat donated something like 30,000 bottles of Red Cat. So they had to go and open these bottles, which must have been time, but we're desperate at that point to get hand sanitizer here in our area, and Chris Carlson, Spirits Review, otherwise known as your Spirits Advisor. He was instrumental in working with quite a few distilleries, showing them how to make hand sanitizer, and actually helping out at some of those distilleries. So this same thing is happening in France, probably in other parts of the world. Supplies of things like hand sanitizer are hard to find. So Black Button is selling their hand sanitizer, which I think is no longer made with Finger Lakes wine. I think they're purchasing the alcohol. That's become, at least for the moment, more available. And comes in this cool, sort of wine-sized bottle, their hand sanitizer. And you can get a curbside pickup of it. You can order it online through Black Button and maybe get one of the bourbon cream bottles as well. So that's delicious. They've got lots of great spirits at Black Button. And it's right next to Roarbox. A couple of days ago, I was at the public market. I was dropping off some gardening pots for recycling. They have a bin to do that by the market office. And no one was at the market. It was Friday that I was there. And I went to drive out of the Railroad Street entrance of the market and saw the one-way sign, and then realized I just at the moment had forgotten that Railroad Street has turned into a one-way street for part of the street, so that Black Button and Roarbox and Bitter Honey and Boxcar Donuts and Kombucha can use on-street seating, which is divided off by a concrete barrier, but it effectively takes off one lane of traffic, and so now Railroad Street is one way coming in toward the market. And just keep that in mind if you're driving around that area. But it's allowed a lot more outdoor seating, and been probably a big boost for the restaurants. And Roarbox serves food there as well as samples of beer, and Black Button also has tastings and things, and the space on Railroad Street gives them some good options. So if you haven't been down there, you should stop and visit. Also, yesterday, it's Friday, I was at the Brown Hound downtown at the Memorial Art Gallery. Talked to Trish Azer, and that interview is under For Love of Food. If you want to hear from her and hear a little bit about their new project that they're adding called Old School Naples, they're building a restaurant currently in construction, renovating the interior of this 150-year-old one-room schoolhouse in Naples, right across the street from Inspiremore Winery in downtown Naples. And in a few months, some point this fall, they'll have a bakery, sort of breakfast lunch place in Naples, in addition to the Brown Hound downtown. Also, when I interviewed her, maybe it was Thursday that I stopped in, they weren't certain that the furniture would be in, but it did arrive, and they were able to set up some outdoor seating at the Memorial Art Gallery. So there's a big tent, but that is for the creative workshop, and that's on the back side of the museum. But the Brown Hound has some tables and chairs with a lot of shade on the front of the art gallery, just to the right of the entrance. So not only is it outdoor seating, but it also is dog friendly. And they posted a photo of the first dog to come and with their owners and enjoy a meal at the Brown Hound. They've got some delicious baked goods. They're open limited hours. It is not open for dinner, but it is open for brunch on the weekends. So if you haven't been to the Brown Hound, maybe go back and say hello. Just some fantastic food there. You can also take that food outside and on the grounds of the Memorial Art Gallery. There are tons of places to enjoy a picnic. in shade and sun near sculptures. There's a lot to explore on the grounds of the Memorial Art Gallery, and a lot of people haven't had the chance to do it. So get some food and go out and do that. They're also doing delivery and curbside, so many options at the Brown Hound. Excited to see them reopen, and especially excited about their new place in Naples. It's called Old School Naples, and you can follow them on Facebook to see what's happening with construction. Email me if you have comments and questions, michael@saverlife.com. We'll be back on Saturday with Gardening Restaurants Discover the Finger Lakes here at saverlife.com. Have a great day.